truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
You tell me, this has been your first film for how long?
What, 7 years? 8 years?
The government gave Goldman Sachs more than Goldman Sachs had any right to expect.
I think he's disgusting. I don't think the guy has a soul. Seriously.
Congressman King, well, you know, I'm just trying to figure this out. You pushed an effort to defund Acorn, but at the same time you're saying James O'Keefe is innocent until proven guilty.
You blew it!
And that's just the way it is.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Coming up this hour, we have Bob Bakian, who will talk to us about the Apple iPad, the new iPad from Apple. And we also have coming up next hour Mr. Gandhi Sinclair, who is with the Haitian Business Conference, and he'll be talking to us about Haitian relief and where's the money going? How's it getting to Haiti? How is it being disseminated? Because this has been, as you know, if you listen to our show, this has been a pet sort of project, pet interest of ours. Okay, so we've raised all this money for Haiti. Now, is it getting to the people that it needs to get to? So that will be answered, hopefully, coming up next hour. 877-876-PHIL is the number here on the groundbreaking, world-famous Phil Hendry Show from the El Pacifico. And if you'd like to join us on our website, that's a great way to follow the show, particularly for those of you who may be in an area where we do not have an affiliate, although we are very proud to say that we've got more affiliates coming on board now than ever before. We just picked up our good friends in Santa Barbara, KIST. Santa Barbara. Also coming up, Ted Haggard is reportedly cured of being a raging, flaming, roaring homosexual. That's right. You know, what do you call him? What is the guy?
He's like a preacher.
Yeah, he's a preacher, and he was caught snorting crank off of a hunting knife and having sex with a male model. But other than that, the cat's doing great. All right, 877-876-PHIL, and on the line, as I mentioned, Bob Bakian. From Los Angeles. We're going to talk to Bob here about this iPad. And, Bob, you probably know a lot more about the iPad than I do. I was about to say iTunes, you know.
Yeah, well, the iPad is from Apple. His iTunes is from Apple, Phil. And these are heady days for Apple.
Well, tell me about this thing. I heard Steve Jobs. In fact, probably what we should do before we talk any further about this is to listen to Steve Jobs. He outlined the wonder that is the new iPad here for a group of people at a conference that he was attending. So here's Steve Jobs. Let's listen to him very briefly describe the iPad, if you'd like, okay?
Well, I can tell you more about it, probably. I could be more truthful about it than Steve Jobs is going to be, but...
All right, well, let me just hear what he has to say.
You can browse the web with it. It is the best browsing experience you've ever had. It's phenomenal to see a whole web page right in front of you, and you can manipulate with your fingers. It's unbelievably great. Way better than a laptop.
Not that good.
Way better than a smartphone.
Not that, no, it's
phenomenal
not.
For mail. For photos, your albums are shown as stacks of photos. Your albums are events. Built in a calendar. Built in a great address book. Have a great Maps application, which works with Google's back end. Again, using this thing is remarkable. It's so much more intimate than a laptop, and it's so much more capable than a smartphone with this gorgeous large display.
All right, Bob, what did Steve Jobs say there that you don't agree with?
Well, I will tell you, Phil, I think Steve Jobs is a very dangerous man with a pitch like that in front of, shareholders and employees. He is a dangerous man. To talk about the iPad is something, first of all, no, it doesn't replace an iPhone because the iPhone makes phone calls. The iPad cannot make phone calls. But he is dangerous, I think, in the way he extols the virtues of something, which is going to, in my opinion, and I've taken a look at this, and believe me when I tell you, because I have marketed a lot of different implements and a lot of different equipment for marketing intelligence as well as private investigation, I know this field. And I can tell you that this iPad, with its 10-inch screen, it weighs about a pound and a half, is going to take the art of industrial and corporate espionage to the next level.
Now, when you say corporate and industrial espionage, you're talking about companies spying on each other.
That is exactly what I'm talking about. And what Steve Jobs has done is he's handed them on a silver platter the holy grail of corporate espionage. When you've got something that's a 10-inch screen, a pound and a half, you can hide this thing just about anywhere, and you will run all more than 140,000 applications on this thing. And can be used with their iPhone, can be used with their iPod, You're talking about something that has more applications and has more abilities and capabilities than anything that has ever come along before. And Steve Jobs thinks this is great. But what Steve Jobs isn't telling the stockholders, and what he's not telling the consumer, is that this thing is in the hands of the wrong people will be devastating, not only to corporations and companies. It can be devastating to individual families, because if you have a family where people are now sitting with their iPad and they're sitting off in a corner, they're sitting at breakfast nook or wherever they are, and they're able to make notes and keep track of the different habits and the different places that members of the family go during the day, what they're eating, what they're doing. And now you have family members that are spying on each other, family members that are looking at each other and trying to find the Achilles heel so that they can, whatever it is that they're looking to, whatever advantage they're looking to gain. I think that...
When you say family members spying on each other...
The point I'm making here, Phil, is it gives people the opportunity. When you give them a tool that they never had before, then suddenly a whole new horizon opens to them, a new way of looking at things, and they will recognize now I can do just about anything I want to do. I can spy on a family member. I can spy on a teacher. I can spy on a coworker. I can, for instance, keep track with the iPad, with the built-in camera capability, and my ability to store memory and store information. I will be able to spy on a coworker. Turn this information over anonymously into the main drive of the company computer and have that person's name come up as a security risk, and they're fired and they are in the street on unemployment and they never know what hit them.
And you're talking about the iPad from Apple as something that is a tool of espionage and spying.
Subterfuge, Phil. Exactly. We know that the biggest threat to American security is not the government. We've known for a long time that the biggest threat to American security are the American people themselves spying on each other, intruding into the personal lives of each other. The American people themselves are far more intrusive than any government. We know this from different community organizations, different neighborhood watch groups, different parent-teacher organizations, different concerned parent organizations, that there is no limit to the intrusion into the private affairs of individuals that these seemingly innocuous groups are engaged in. And you give them an iPad, and now your local concerned parent organization, your local PTO, your local Little League, your local cookie exchange becomes a far, far more sophisticated organization. It has a networking capability, and it has an outreach capability that the CIA or the MI6 or the FBI would be envious of.
All right, now, let me ask you about the other comment you were making concerning the American people not being smart enough to use this thing.
It's not that the American people don't have the brains to handle this thing, but they don't have the brains to handle the overall technology. The American people, we have introduced to them, Steve Jobs is, I haven't done this, I'm not going to even take any responsibility for this. Steve Jobs has done this. And what Y2K nightmare landscape awaits us, you can lay in the lap of Steve Jobs. We do not have the capacity to handle the responsibility that an iPad is going to require of us. We're going to have fun spying on each other. We're going to have fun pulling up files on each other. We're going to have fun exchanging files, medical data, medical information.
What do you mean by medical information?
Well, if you're talking with your doctor and you're saying, well, doctor, you say I have a prescription, yes, I'll pass that to you, and somebody else with an iPad is hacking into that and pulling your medical information right out of the air, sitting there with their 10-inch screen and their pound-and-a-half iPad, that is every bit as powerful as the most powerful computer that was used on any submarine in World War I, and then you're able to take that information and spread it throughout the Internet, I think you know what I'm talking about. So... I think the American people have no idea what they're in store for with this iPad, and the idea that they think they can handle this kind of technology is akin to any superhero, supervillain, if you will, from any Spider-Man movie, where the villain thinks he's doing the good, and in point of fact, he turns into a goblin or a man with all of those arms that the one guy had. So the Green Goblin, I think he thought he was doing good. But instead, he turned into someone who did nothing but destroy things, and he didn't even know why he did what he did. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but I'm saying the iPad is the kind of technology that can make the American people go from being a benign people, a people who are just looking to be informed and to enjoy their lives, into a, as my son said the other day, bat blank. I can't use the word, but he said they're going to go bat S.
All right, I get the idea. So the iPad, you have just told me here, and I don't know whether you are part of a competing technology, Bob, you know?
No, I don't have any competition. I don't have any interest in any competing technology. I'm trying to tell you that a 10-inch screen, a pound and a half, this is too much technology to put into the hands of the American people who can barely handle it, who barely can handle the responsibility. That comes with such power and such technology. And Steve Jobs, he doesn't care. He doesn't care at all. He's a very dangerous man. That's the point I've been trying to make.
All right, 877-876-PHIL is the number here. You just heard Bob Bakian talking about the iPad, the new Apple iPad. I dare say you're not going to hear anybody saying that it is a dangerous thing, that it is too much technology and too much responsibility to ask of the American people, and that this thing sounds like you, if you use this thing, you can, it's some sort of a corporate espionage or industrial espionage device. 877-876-PHIL is the number here. Bob Bakian from Market Securities. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Also coming up later on tonight, we'll be talking with Gandhi Sinclair from Haiti and other such things and things. 877-876-PHIL, and we'll be back.
Phil Hendry. Show.
877-876-PHIL. We're talking this hour, just a couple of more minutes, actually, with Bob Bakian about the Apple iPad. Now, the Apple iPad is a brand new bit of technology, brand new bit of hardware and software. It's a computer. And we really haven't described, Bob, what this thing is.
There's not a whole lot to describe. I mean, it's, as I mentioned, you said it is a computer. It's a small computer. They call it the iPad. Like they had the desk book, which you were supposed to believe was a large day planner or a large notepad that you put on your desk. Well, this thing is, according to these people, this thing is a big iPad. Well, that's fine. It's small and it's compact. It can run 140,000 applications. But the big addition is an iBook application with Apple's own online iBookstore. You can, as an e-reader, you can purchase books. That's what they say. But you see, this accesses, I don't trust any company that has made the amount of money that Apple has made in as short a time as Apple has made it. I don't trust them.
And you don't trust them?
I don't trust them, no. I don't trust Jobs as far as I could throw them. And I'm telling people who are listening tonight on your broadcast and other programs that I've been on, Phil, over the last week, that no company in this recession that is posting a quarterly earning a quarterly profit, a net profit of $3.4 billion, which Apple did do in this last quarter, I think that these people are in up to their hips in things that are dangerous to the American people. And
well, so is it safe to say that what you're saying about the iPad being a really dangerous application that can help people spy on each other, you don't really know?
I'm telling you that, yes, I do. There's something wrong with it. There's something wrong with any company that makes a $3 billion profit in the middle of a recession that is cleaning out every other company in this country and around the world. There's something going on. And when Steve Jobs stands there with that voice of his, that calm, cool, and collected voice, while everybody else is losing their shorts on Wall Street, and Jobs stands up and says, and it's going to do this, and it's going to do that. He sounds like a guy who knows what's going on. He sounds like a guy that's got too much information. That's why I say he's a dangerous man, and that's why I say I wouldn't trust Apple as far as I could spit into a hurricane. And I say that, Phil, with a lot of years of experience behind me.
All right, let me go to a phone call here. We got R.C. on the line here from Altadena. R.C., you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Bob Bakian. Go ahead.
Well, Yeah, my name is R.C. Collins, and I'm calling from Bradley Military Academy. I want to, first of all, say that I'm enjoying your program, Mr. Henry, and I always have had done that, and I wanted to say that.
Thank you.
Mr. Arbakian, did you say that the Apple iPad was going to be like a spy bot? Did you say a spy bot?
No, no, I didn't say a spy bot. I know what you're saying about spy. Spy bot is something that's more of a virus.
You didn't say spy bot?
No, if the young man could hold on.
Hold on, R.C.
I didn't say spy bot. I said a spy bot is more like a virus. A spy bot is something that is, it could be a virus or it could be just something that is inserted into a an application you're using or something online. Now, these are the iPad is more, I think, direct. The iPad is a piece of hardware. It's your computer, okay?
Yeah, but it's not an I. It's not a robot or anything that you were talking about it being.
No, it's not a robot. And I wasn't saying that. What I said was that it is.
But you did say it could infiltrate on the companies that you wanted to.
I could. Yes, you can use it as a application.
Now, what do you do? You say you're a military academy, RC?
Yeah, I'm at Bradley Military Academy, and I was wondering about the defensive application for this on account of America being in all of the wars on the terrorism. We could use it and do, you know, I mean, I don't want to say, but couldn't we use this to find Osama bin Laden and hopefully with the help of special forces, I don't know, you know, track him down and put a smart bomb into the cave that he's in.
You're saying that you would...
No, I understand what he's saying. He's one of the... Is there a defensive application of the United States government? There's no question, R.C., that this could be used by capable people. The iPad could be used by capable people in the Defense Department. But to give it to the American people, you can well imagine if I can use this to track down where Osama bin Laden is. And deliver an explosive, which is what I think you were saying.
Well, yeah, I was saying if you could deliver a smart bomb into the cave that he's in.
I don't know where he is, whether he's in a cave or...
Well, all right, let's say he's not in a cave. Can you still do it? What if he was in a cave well beyond the area?
What do you mean well beyond the area?
Beyond the domain of what we know about.
I think the kid's talking about some Harry Potter...
I'm not talking about Harry Potter. I'm talking about where bin Laden is in relation to the special forces of America. Jesus.
Hey.
I understand.
Well, no, you don't understand. You think Harry Potter...
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean Harry.
Well, don't use the language, okay?
What? I don't know what you mean.
Well, all this Jesus.
Now, the kid wants to know that...
You talk much?
Yeah, I talk much.
Well, you do, huh? Well, then...
Hey, kid, he's answering your question, okay? He's a little flustered because you're pressing him about this bullcrap. What do you mean beyond the domain?
Beyond the domain of where bin Laden lives as opposed to where he might be.
Well, what does that mean?
He's either in a cave or he's... Okay, should I say...
Huh?
There have been people who said they saw bin Laden at a Blockbuster. And all I'm saying...
877-876-PHIL. I apologize for that, Bob.
I don't know. What did he say?
That people have seen bin Laden at a Blockbuster.
The Blockbuster video.
Blockbuster video, yeah. All right, so... But to answer that question, this thing can't deliver explosives, nothing like that.
No, it can't deliver any explosives. It's just a piece of... It's a computer that Apple's come up with, and no company can be that lucky. No company can be that smart. No company can keep rolling out stuff that earns them billions and billions of dollars. I think Jobs, if you want to talk about Harry Potter and you want to talk about the Goosebumps series or any of these, if you want Wizards, Steve Jobs is as close to a necromancer as I've ever seen. Steve Jobs is as close... to the very heart, the very blackened heart of evil, as I've ever seen.
Why? Because the guy's company's making money?
The guy's company is making money in the middle of the worst financial crisis this country has seen for years. You do have to wonder where the funding for this type of iPad technology is coming from, China or Russia? You understand about that, huh? You know where that is, right?
Yeah, I know where Russia is.
Russia.
Yeah. It's just a question. I've got questions. I'm looking for answers.
Well, all right. Well, good luck getting the answers.
So you can't help me?
No, I can't help you, okay? I can't even help. I wouldn't want to help you. Coming up next, John Edwards is now single and on the market. Ain't that something? World famous Phil Henry Show. 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Henry.
Well, that isn't quite right.
This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
All right, 877-876-PHIL is our number, and our website is philhenryshow.com. This is the groundbreaking Phil Henry Show. Next hour, we have with us Mr. Gandhi Sinclair from Haiti, and we'll talk about something we've been very interested in, and that is, when the money gets to Haiti, then what? See, I've been hearing about, and you guys have heard us talking about how we need to raise money. We need this. And I heartily recommend that you not donate any more money to Haiti relief until you find out exactly how the money is turned into the goods and services and supplies and medicines that they need, and then how it's eventually delivered to the people of Haiti. That's not a bad question to ask. I don't know about you, I'm real tired of hearing about how, oh, well, they ripped off this and they ripped off that. It's another, no. I don't give a damn how many people are dying, because the fact is they're going to croak anyway, no matter how much money I give, because there's somebody in the middle stealing it. So,
well, why don't you wait till next hour?
Don't tell me how to do it.
Yeah, man, he knows what he's doing. Yeah, but you're spilling it all right now.
Don't, I feel very emotional about it. Do you mind?
Let's get into the Gail Haggard thing.
I'm going to belt you.
Bill, I hit a retard.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, on account of the American of Disability Act.
Oh, why don't you go and freaking get that oxygen tank out of here, okay, that I've been having to breathe out of. Now then,
you don't want to see that, man. It's bad for your image.
I ain't breathed out of that thing in a week and a half. I haven't either. People have been looking at our streaming video. Have you seen me taking oxygen? No. Have you seen me with a tube in my nose? No. Do I go upstairs and breathe it every night when I go to sleep? Yes. No, I don't. But to be honest with you, I might as well get into it. When I got back from the hospital, I brought with me one. Seriously, because I said to the doctor, I said, I got to get out of here, man. You got to get me out. You got to get me out, doc. And the doctor is looking at me, and they're, well, you know, Phil, I'm not going to let you go until this is an event. And as well they should. Doctors say, you know, you can want all you want, man, but we're not going to let you out until you're ready to be let out. Now, I could have gotten up and left anytime I wanted to.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can leave anytime you want on account of it's not a concentration camp or anything about that, right?
Would you get that out of here like I said?
Sorry.
So anyway, the guy says, all right, we're going to let you go today, Phil, and everything's good. You know, your antibiotics kicking in, this, that. But we want to send you home with oxygen. I'm like, well, okay. Wow. So they wheel in a tank with a tube coming out of the nose. Now, I'm telling you right now, if you want something that'll make you feel like you're 100 years old, try sticking one of those plastic tubes with the oxygen in your nose and then dragging a tank behind you, walking down a corridor full of people, or maybe in a food court somewhere, or maybe on your way to a ball game. You know, all of a sudden, you're 57 going on 107. So I got into the car. We went home. Then the cat comes over to my house from the oxygen company with two more tanks, because this is what the doctors wanted. They wanted a machine that will turn regular air into oxygen. That's how bad off I was, man. I mean, I was sick, you know. So why am I on this topic?
I don't know, man. It started you talking about it. You shouldn't even talk about it.
Well, I might as well, because I told him to get the tank out of here. All right, I want to get on to something else. I want to get on to another disease. Yes, the disease of homosexuality. As you know, it can be cured. And Ted Haggard's wife says her man is cured of being a homosexual. Ted Haggard, now, he is the preacher that was caught, as I mentioned, with a male model. And I think they were involved in some kind of drug activity. Drugs, male model, you can well imagine oil was probably involved. I mean, certain things follow. Drug, male model, okay, so was there oil? Well, there was, yeah, okay, there was oil, and I don't know. Can we say that there were other men, pool parties? Yeah. Oh, male prostitute, not a model. Excuse me, I didn't mean to offend the male models. So in any event, Ted Haggard's wife is standing by her man no matter how many times he may have had homosexual affairs. Gail Haggard appeared on the Today Show on Wednesday to talk about her new book, Why I Stayed, The Choices I Made in My Darkest Hour, and declared that her one-time evangelical superstar husband was cured of his homosexual compulsions. Our sexuality is conditioned, and we can be conditioned in any number of ways, she told Meredith Vieira. Ted was dealing with certain compulsions that were unwanted. However, through therapy, she claims those compulsions, which she said Ted had suffered from most of his life, were gone. But that's not true for everybody, she added. That's his story. I don't know. So that's a very safe way of saying maybe some guys go back to being gay for the rest of their lives, and that's just where that's at. But Ted, he's good. He likes women. And he's been to the, I don't know what, to the gay camp where they pour hot fat on your exposed flesh until you scream and say, I'll never be a queer no more. And then you're good, see? So it's called aversion therapy.
Yeah, I'm talking about, in other words, torture.
Yeah, in other words, torture. No, I don't know if they do that. They do a lot of stuff that's, I've heard a lot of gay guys who've been in these camps because they really wanted to be straight, and they come out and they go back to being gay, and all we did was read Bible verse. It didn't help me. All I could think about was getting out of there. Now, Haggard admitted that her husband, who once led a church of nearly 14,000 worshipers, had a homosexual relationship early in their marriage. She said, I think at that point I was ignorant of the gravity. I felt as though, you know, we all struggle in different areas of our lives and certainly in our sexuality, so I was willing to forgive him. Well, how was she struggling?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Probably staying with this guy. Haggard said she might, Haggard said that he sought counseling then and told her it wouldn't happen again. I felt as though the problem was pretty much solved, she said, but it would reemerge in his life from time to time and he wouldn't tell me about it. Haggard also recounted the moment she learned there was some truth to the 2006 claims of drugs and gay sex that disgraced the religious leader who, at his height, reportedly consulted with President George W. Bush. And I hope that this is going to break us of, and this started really with Ronald Reagan, with all due respect, these superstar preachers who have access to the White House. I never liked it then, and I don't like it now. I don't mind people visiting. I just don't like it. Jerry Falwell used to hang out with Reagan. In fact, I think he had access at one point to the Pentagon or some crap. We, I'm watching, this is where the, just keep these guys at arm's length. I don't know why I say this. Maybe it's because I don't think any good comes of it. Here's a guy here. He's talking with George Bush. Bush is down there at the farm right now, or the ranch or whatever he's at, saying, man, are you telling me that guy's as queer? That's what I'm saying, Mr. President. Holy jeez. I felt shock, first of all, and then heartbreak. Once I discovered that there was some truth to the allegation, said poor Gail Haggard. I felt that my marriage was at a healthy place. Everything in my life felt healthy at that time. I felt healthy. He looked healthy. Everyone, it was all real healthy. Even the guy he was seeing was healthy, or so I hoped. That was probably the happiest time of my life. So she thought that he was cured of being,
a queer.
Of being a homosexual. But little did she know. The couple was at their attorney's office the day after the shocking allegations first came to light. The prostitute, Mike Jones, claimed Ted had been a client of his for several years and had even bought drugs from him. I had gone to the bathroom and I'd gotten back, and the attorney had told me to go into the office with Ted, and he closed the door. I felt life draining from my body because things didn't feel right all of a sudden. When her husband confessed to her that there was some truth to the allegations, that happy image of life was shattered. I couldn't speak, Haggard said. I think I eventually uttered the words, "Who are you?" And that's when he broke into a dance, which I didn't think was funny. And I told him, no, he didn't. She said, "Who are you?" Because it was so far removed from the man that I knew, even though he'd go around town on a scooter. I knew I was going to have to make the choice early on as to what I was going to do, and I chose early on that I really do love this man, and I'm willing to fight with him for our marriage and our family. As a result, Haggard said her life has never been better. Our relationship is better than it's ever been. That's exactly what she said just before the other shoe dropped back there in 06, but okay. Going over this mountain together is giving me the marriage I've always longed for, except next year I'll probably get another bombshell about him and somebody else having to do with Bangkok. I don't know, she said as she slammed the door of her Range Rover. So you feel sorry for these people. I'll tell you why. Because this guy is a homosexual, and he's not going to be, quote, cured of it. Now, it doesn't mean he's going to act, you know, I say act out. It doesn't mean that he will engage in any homosexual activity, but for the rest of her life, she's going to be with a man who is only half happy with his life because he'd rather be with guys, but he also loves her and he loves the kids and he wants to do the right thing by them. And he wants desperately to get back into preaching. You know, there's a really great documentary on Ted Haggard that was done by, believe it or not, Nancy Pelosi's daughter, and I can't remember her name. She did it for HBO. She's done two, and it's terrific. It's terrific because the first one shows Haggard at the top of his popularity leading up to the revelations. The second one starts with his being ostracized by the church. He was thrown out of this church that he was in, right? And she starts off the movie by saying, "So, Ted, the last time I saw you, you had all these friends." He goes, "Yeah." He says, "Where are your friends?" Alexandra Pelosi, The Trials of Ted Haggard. I highly recommend it. You feel so sorry for this guy. You do. You feel so sorry for this guy. You cry because he's so self-deluded. He's not a bad guy. He doesn't come off as an evil man. He's just self-deluded. And she says, she make that statement, "Where are all your friends?" And, of course, you talk about Christians. You know, at a time where this guy could probably use the fellowship of that church, he has been thrown out. So anyway, I just thought it was amazing. You know, one thing about Christianity, I shouldn't say that this is true of all Christianity, but the Christianity that we talk about in America, you know, lately I've been taken to watching white gospel clips on YouTube. I like those white boys just singing that whole, "Oh, give me that old time," you know, I like, dig it. But one thing about the songs they sing, it's always about heaven. It's always about, "I'm not going to be here long, and someday I'm going to be walking on those roads of gold," you know, or "Jesus is building me a mansion," you know. It ain't nothing. There's one song about how, "Boy, I'm getting real itchy, man. I got to split off this planet, man, and get to heaven." It's all about, "I got to get to heaven, got to get to heaven, got to get to heaven." If that's the focus always, right, of course you're going to take a guy like Ted Haggard and throw him in a gutter. You don't want to spend any more time with that queer than you have to, because you won't get to heaven, because that's the whole thing. All these tunes about gotta be, you know, gotta get to heaven, gotta, you know, I'm gold rolled, I'm gonna do this, gonna do that. Yeah, as a matter of fact, here it is. I don't know if this is the song, Bud. Do you know which one?
No, I got a better one. This is way better, okay? Way better.
What do you mean, way better?
This is the song that I think, because the other one stinks, but here's one that they sing so beautifully. Here it is.
All right, well, okay, The Prophets. And here's the song.
You can browse the web with it.
It is the. Get out of here with that. Now, where is it?
Right here.
What the hell is this?
Man, this is really good.
What a wonderful.
Will you get out of here with
it? That's the song.
Get out of here with that crap.
Jordan.
877-876-PHIL. We'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. Next hour is. Oh, my God.
You got a nosebleed.
Yeah, I think I do. We'll be back next hour. Gandhi Sinclair.
My whole life's dream.
Phil Hendry.
We'll be there before you.
The world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Coming up next hour, we have Mr. Gandhi Sinclair. He is a Haitian businessman with the Haitian Business Conference, and we're going to talk about the relief efforts made on behalf of the Haitian people by people the world over, and just exactly how that money is turned into the things the folks in Haiti need, and is it getting to them? Because that should be of overriding importance to anybody who thinks they're concerned with the situation in Haiti. Because I just think it's about more than giving right at this particular point. All right, here's a story out of Australia that is interesting, and I know why they did this, and some people may argue the opposite point of view, but here it is. And by the way, I had the good fortune of actually being in the office of Matt Groening once, who created The Simpsons, where he was showing me all the bootleg stuff. He collected it. So look at this. There's a bootleg thing from Mexico. Here's a bootleg thing. All these things that were created based upon his characters from The Simpsons that were illegal because they did not have the copyright protection of having been created by him. Nonetheless, an Ipswich, Australia man has admitted downloading graphic cartoon porn images featuring child characters from The Simpsons and the Powderpuff Girls. The 28-year-old is now a registered sex offender and will have to report to police after pleading guilty in Ipswich District Court to having the bizarre images on his computer. Now, this is Australia. This is not the United States. And I forgive me, but you know what? I don't even know what the law states in the United States when it comes to animated images, cartoon images of children having sex. I have to believe that there's something akin to what they have in Australia, but I don't know. The 28-year-old is now a registered sex offender. Police went to Kurt James Milner's Leichhardt home on January 28th in 2008, over a year ago, January 24th, after receiving an anonymous tip-off about the disturbing material. Milner told police he would cooperate but did not want to give them his computer. But an hour and a half later, he phoned police and said they could have his computer. They could now have his computer. So I guess the police were looking for a search warrant. They probably had to go back, get a judge, and meanwhile, this guy's trying to clean his computer up. Well, guess what? Officers discovered the computer would no longer turn on. But a year later, police forensic experts recovered 64 images of cartoon child exploitation material in the machine's recycle bin. Man, them cops, they'll get anything they want out them computers, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't make any difference what you do with it. The cop's going to get it every day.
That's right. That's right.
How they do that, man? If you hit if you hit delete, how come?
Because it's still in there, man. It's still in there, Jack. You know, if you want to get rid of that stuff, you're going to have to take your hard drive apart, take whatever, just take all the parts of the thing, smash them with a steamroller, something, you know.
Well, why don't people do that?
Because the cops are there. What do you do? The cops are there, right?
That's, the guy should have done that.
Maybe he should have. He tried to disable it. Maybe he should have run out and hired a steamroller. I don't know. But he didn't do it, and they got it, and guess what? So they recovered 64 images, and these 64 images, which this is the part that I find interesting, of cartoon child exploitation material. The images depicted figures from The Simpsons, The Powderpuff Girls, and The Incredibles in sexually explicit positions. Milner, a former security guard, told police he downloaded the images to show them to his friend because he believed they were funny. He pled guilty to charges of possessing child exploitation material. So that's the law as it's written in Australia. It exploits children in a sexual way. So it is not actually an image of a real kid, but it is an image designed to exploit the existence of children for sexual imagery, for sexual exploitation. You understand?
No.
I'm not going to explain it.
Well, why not?
Because he doesn't have the time to explain it, you dumbass.
I don't get it.
Good, you don't get it. So anyway, Milner was sentenced to 12 months in jail, but it was wholly suspended for 5 years. The conviction was recorded. He also he was given a $1,000 good behavior bond for 5 years. The Crown prosecutor said the sentence needed to be harsh, as it was Milner's second conviction for having child exploitation material. He was convicted of possessing child exploitation material in 2009. After 59 sexual images of actual youngsters were found on his computer. Although these offenses involve cartoon characters, it is nonetheless serious, especially since he has a prior conviction. So the way the law is written there in Australia, if you have a cartoon image of a child engaged in sex, then that is sexually exploitive of children, and that's where they get you. Now, like I said, I don't know what the law is here in the States. I just got a IM here from Jace. Well, I don't know whether that says it or not.
Right. If you have a cartoon porn of Bart and Lisa Simpson having sex, should it land you under the offender list, though? That's the whole thing.
Well, this jackball already had stuff of other kids, okay?
What if it was all the thing it had, a Bart Simpson nude? If you have, like, if you got Bart Simpson nude of the waist down.
If you have Bart Simpson what?
Nude from the waist down.
Bart Simpson nude from the waist down, what about it?
Do you deserve to be on a sex offender list or what?
I don't know, man, but I'll tell you something right now. If either one of you guys, let me put it to you this way. If I found out that either one of you guys had a picture of Bart Simpson nude from the waist down, I'd fire both of you, and I would also contact the police. You understand?
God, I mean, all we're asking about is the way that whether you would do it or not.
If I found out that either one of you guys had any of this stuff, you're fired and I'd call the cops. Do you understand?
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
Do you have that?
No, man, I'm just asking. You call that sexuality that a Bart Simpson ain't wearing no shorts.
Yeah, if he had no underwear.
Okay, you know what you heard what I just said, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I just said. I'm not explaining anymore. If he had no underwear. The law in the United States seems to state that realistic image of cartoon child porn can be deemed illegal, but obvious cartoon depictions can be protected by the First Amendment. So our law here in the United States is slightly different. In Australia, they don't fool around with it. It's interesting. Parody cartoon sex is also protected, I assume, even if it's between two cartoon images of children. It's weird, man. All right, coming up, we've got Mr. Sinclair from Haiti on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. What about Bart Simpson?
Phil Hendry.
No underwear.